Welcome to the after show. It's the Scaretober edition. I am Michael Rowe. We're recording on Friday, October 28th, just a few days before the Halloween holiday and the even scarier holiday this year, which is Election Day. I am Michael Rose. I am joined, as always, by my partner in podcasting crime, Miss Kelly Grumont. Kelly, how are you doing tonight?
Good, but you didn't introduce yourself with your scary Halloween name. Don't you have a scary Halloween name?
I'm sorry. I'm Mike Ill Rose Zombie. There we go. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
For people who don't spend a lot of time on Twitter, it looks really weird to you right now because everybody on Twitter, and I don't even remember how long ago this started, but in October, everybody changes their name to a Halloween thing. So mine was Kelly Ghoulmont for many years. And this year, Glenn Fleischman was handing out Halloween names for people. And I said, I'm sure you could do better than I do. And he said, is Skelly Ghoul Morgue too obvious? And I went, no, not at all. In fact, it's wonderful. So, hi, I'm Skelly Ghoul Morgue. How are things? It's one of the things about Twitter that I really like that sort of has held over from the olden times. And I really enjoy it. And there's a whole other conversation to be had about Twitter if we really want to, but I kind of don't want to. I would rather talk about the other new stuff we got this week, not the stuff we got from Twitter this week.
So. No, or the stuff that Twitter is now taking away from us this week, or will be taking away.
I was talking about tweets on football games because we're.
Well, yes, tweets on football games is a beautiful thing, but. The lack of taking away everybody's 10-second videos, you know, not cool.
Six-second
videos?
Yeah, Vine is six.
Vine is
Twitter killed Vine for people playing along at home.
Yeah. I thought Vine was 10 seconds.
No, it's 6 seconds to fame. Yeah.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. Man, my sense of time is completely shot. Well, let's talk about the other stuff that we did get or got promised this week. What are we at?
Okay, so I'm going to paint this in really broad strokes to just jump in. And if anyone needed further proof of what I've been saying for months now, which is in 2016, all bets are off. Here's what you need to know about the last week. The big hardware event that got all the nerds excited about the new thing that came out of the computer company was Microsoft. Apple had a hardware event. Apple introduced some stuff and everybody went, eh. Did you see what Microsoft did yesterday?
I don't know that they went, eh.
That was the deal.
Well, I don't know that they quite went, eh. I mean, I certainly was a person who saw the Surface Studio. Is that what it's called? The Surface Sketchpad, Surface.
The touchscreen iMac that Microsoft released
The touchscreen collapsible iMac. Yeah, that caught my attention, both from an industrial design perspective, but also from a very forward, verging on blatant play at creative types.
Absolutely.
It comes with a knob. It comes with a very cool user interface concept. If you remember the Griffin PowerMate, which was
the PowerMate. That's what that was called.
I have one in a box around here somewhere. It is a USB paddle. It's like an Atari paddle. USB, and you could use it to scrub in video editing applications. You could use it to scroll in audio editing applications. It's a great little controller.
The point of it is that it was configurable. It was like a mouse or a keyboard command, and there were certain things that you could do with it depending on the app that you were in and all that kind of stuff. It was really great.
Exactly. But now Microsoft has made one for the Surface Studio, whatever it's called. It is called the Surface Studio.
The new Surface.
And Microsoft's version of the puck is called the Surface Dial, This is the power mate. And so the Surface Dial, you actually put on the screen and you use it to create virtual UI components.
Yeah. One of the things that they showed off was someone in a drawing app, and this person, or like painting sort of, and this person was doing a lot of things in a bunch of different colors, and then they were turning the knob with their other hand, and it was changing the color that they were using with the pen as they were drawing. So the thing to me that was really interesting about this is that is a bunch of things. Number one, it's a fundamentally different computer than we've seen from anybody yet, both in size and interface, like physical interface level. I don't remember even, and I granted I did not see the entire thing, but I don't remember seeing the keyboard that they talked about going with it. So that was a really interesting thing. It's got this whole gravity arm thing. So you kind of go whoosh, and like you tip your iMac down and now it's a drafting table because it's a 28 inch screen. So it's like a 27 inch iMac.
Pixel Sense, which is the
the
funny thing about the funny, this is a complete rat hole, but the funny thing about the Surface branding that Microsoft has now is this is not the first product or product line that Microsoft has had that was called Surface. The original Microsoft Surface was a table the size
like a of a coffee table.
Yeah, like a coffee table or a pocket billiards table that was a giant touchscreen that was designed for bars and other sort of public space installations. And I used a couple of them in the wild. And then that became the Pixel Sense and became a separate product and a separate concept. And then Surface was adopted for the tablet, the Pro tablets or the prosumer tablets. And now we have the Surface Studio, which has a Pixel Sense display, which is just kind of funny. Also,
familiar.
Also, the Surface Book with Performance Base has a Pixel Sense display, and it's listed on Microsoft Store as twice the processing power of MacBook Pro 13, which I believe is a stat that is somewhat out of date, because that's probably the old MacBook Pro 13 and not the new one. But anyway.
Is it, though? Because they're not that different. So
yeah, they're a little different.
This was the thing this is the thing that Microsoft introduced, and you interact with it in a fundamentally different way. You can interact with stuff on your computer in a fundamentally different way. And this is fundamentally different, even understanding the Surface that we've seen from Microsoft already.
Yes.
Like the little one with the snappy keyboard dancing people to the dubstep song or whatever that thing was that they were trying to use to advertise it. It was really interesting to see, because when I looked at the event, when I was watching what they were doing and showing off, it was the potential of it. So it was very similar to me to the initial MacBook Air event and the initial iPad event, where maybe at this moment in my life, I don't see the place for this particular bit of gear for me, myself, but I see the potential in it. I see all the ways that people could use this stuff. I see all the possibility that is there, even with Windows 10, like, which is not popular with a lot of people. And I get that. There were still people that were like, yeah, I know it runs Windows 10, but like, did you see it? It looks amazing. So once they're out in the world, they ship like December 15th or something. Like, you can get a few of them if you got in on the pre-order immediately or something. Once they're more commonly available, I'm really interested to see where it ends up, because it seems like a great device. And like you were talking about, Microsoft is totally gunning for creatives, which probably makes creatives happy, because nobody's been gunning for them for a long time, at least as far as Cupertino is concerned. So that brings us to the next day when we got the Apple announcement.
Yes, indeed. It does.
And Apple, and to start with, this was a very confusing event for me. And I said people's general reaction was because I was trying to be generous, because I saw a lot of vitriol because I was looking at Twitter. and it was, in fact, a day that ended in Y. So, you know, vitriol on Twitter.
That's where you could find it. That's where
exactly.
If you went looking for it, you would find it.
That's generally where it's kept, there and YouTube comments. And so I was looking at like what people were saying, and most of what I found for the event overall was, for me, was confusion. because they started out, we're going to launch an entirely new hunk of our website that is dedicated to accessibility, because look at all the great things that you can do with our computer if you have some sort of handicap. And if you are, you know, if you are a person who does not see well, you can use this. If you are a person who uses a wheelchair, we've built the capability to track your workouts into the watch. If you are a person who is not physically able to run things, we still give you loads of opportunities to interact with stuff on your computer. We don't think that that should be a hindrance. And then they announced a laptop that has a little strip at the top that you have to stare at. So that was one thing. And then they were like, okay, now we're going to show you the Apple TV. And on the Apple TV, we have this TV app, and it'll show you everything that you watch on your Apple TV in one place, except for Amazon Prime, because there is no app, and Netflix, because Netflix couldn't be bothered. So all the stuff that people mostly watch on their Apple TV, you can't do that here. But, you know, like, that was the whole thing to me. And then they used Hello Again as the name of the event. Right. And Hello Again, so for people, again, playing along at home, although most of you who are playing along at home, hi, Chris Fuller, already know this. The first Mac, when it made its grand debut, like the way it made its debut, was Hello. And then when the iMac came out, when the initial iMac, the Bondi Blue, Steve's triumphant return to the company, that was also a Hello event. And it was a fundamental shift in the way people thought about computers, because this was a blue computer. Nobody had ever seen one before. It was one piece. It was like a throwback to the old Mac that was a one piece machine.
No floppy drive, USB.
But it was also, fundamentally different from every other computer that was out there, even though it was only one piece. So yeah, so there was no floppy drive. We got the hockey puck mouse. And I thought it was Hello Again as well. I thought it was Hello Again. And so a lot of people were expecting a fundamental update, like, to the Pro line, to the little black round computer, or perhaps some whole new way that Apple is going to make people who desire that kind of horsepower happy, because Apple's not shown those people a lot of love. They sort of, like, it sort of felt like they put out that Mac Pro, you know, the R2-D2, the Starbucks trash can, whatever you want to call it, that Mac Pro that they put out was sort of like, well, here, you know, it's been 3 years since the last one, so we're going to give you a new computer. Here you go. But there's not really a clear upgrade path for it. There's not a lot that you can do to actually upgrade it. The Mini still just sits off in the wilderness going, wait, look at me, I'm still pretty. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do for one of those either. And so then they gave us the MacBook Pro, the MacBook Pro, and the MacBook Pro. But nobody I know who is actually pro is, like, super pumped about these. Like, there are people who are really excited about the strip at the top that has a name I can't remember,
touch bar. It's touch bar.
That thing.
Yes.
Okay. Touch. Yes.
Or as we call it over here in Star Trek: The Next Generation land, the Elkar's strip.
Okay. So Elkar's strip.
The Acutogram. The onboard Acutogram.
The onboard Acutogram. Show title.
The onboard Acutogram. Well, and I was the one who suggested that Michael Acuda, who is one of the visual designers responsible for the Star Trek: The Next Generation control panels, the dynamic interface that changed based on what you were doing in your science fiction spaceship. I suggested that he perhaps was due some royalties or at least some credit for the touch bar, because it is that. Now, of course, we've had devices in our pockets for a while that have had mutable interfaces, but always in the context of, you know, the whole device is changing, the application was changing, but the controls weren't moving around to accommodate you moving from task to task, and that but this is and it's something that is ephemeral. There's something that is mutable within the context of a you know, a hardware product not traditionally known for that. So
right.
So yeah, the Acuda strip.
So it was, so there, for me, I was excited to see what we were going to get, because then like the news started to come out. Oh, it's going to be a new laptop. Oh, we found all this stuff in the developer beta of what the new machine looks like, blah, blah, blah. It's this magical little touchy feely strip, whatever. And I remember kind of going, okay, yeah, but that can't be all. You can't use hello again for a new laptop. Like, you can't cash that chip for that. You can't. And they totally did, because that's all we got. We spent an hour and a half on a new computer that's really not that new when you get down to it. Like, they made it thinner and they made it lighter. And, you know, my most retweeted comment on it was, it's our thinnest, lightest Apple event ever.
Well, there's Apple TV TV.
Which doesn't count. Like,
I think the point about the proness, the proitude is important. That, now, you know, fair's fair. There's a lot of people who are professionals on their doing professional work on their computers for whom their primary machine is a MacBook Pro. And in fact, right. I know a small sample of those folks who have been sticking with a 2011 or 2012 MacBook Pro waiting for this upgrade cycle. So this is going to make a big difference for them.
Because they didn't buy the computer of, I mean, like, the computer I bought a year and a half ago is still current even after the event we just had.
Yeah, but
like, there's no difference in the specs on the mere mortal F key version.
The mere mortal F key version. That may in fact be the show title. But the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, the fact that these machines max out at 16 gig of RAM. Now, again, the idea that 16 gig of RAM might be considered inadequate is, you know, a moment where I think us old people can stop for just a breath and say, wow, really? Wow.
Right.
But it's true.
Well, it is. And here's the thing that has frustrated me about a lot of this is, I know that every time Apple does anything, whatever it is, here's a new phone, here's a new computer, here's a basket of puppies, there's always people that are going to be ready to hate on it. And that's fine. And I get that. And that's not what I'm trying to do. And there are also the faction of people who say, if it's not for me, it's not for anybody. And I understand that too. I don't agree with it, but I understand where those people seem to think that they are coming from. And I can't find the capital P people in this. Because, like, the pro argument for me, like, a lot of people said, you know, I have a 2011 or a 2012 MacBook, you know, or some other older piece of hardware. And here's my workflow. And there were a lot of people who were showing their desks, and they're all using, like, the vertical hinge dock. So the computer is closed because they're hooked up to a big monitor and they have their own keyboard and trackpad or mouse or Cintiq or whatever setup. So a lot of people are never going to get the value out of the strip that they've added to the Pro to make it pro-ier. So number one, you know, number two, like, they specifically took a moment to point out that they've worked with LG on this monitor in the video that they were doing, which was weird. So clearly Apple doesn't care anymore. Like, they put out that 5K iMac, and that's like the best monitor you can buy now, and it comes with a whole computer strap to the back.
Well, there's word from Apple, The Verge that Apple may have stepped out of the standalone monitor business. So that's why the LG co-branding or co-designs are the next thing.
But who had an LG monitor? Who has an LG monitor on their desk right now? Like, people who care about that kind of thing? How many of those are LG monitors? Because I don't know any of those people. And I'm honestly asking. I'm not trying to be, like, snarky about this. I'm really trying to understand. I didn't even know LG made monitors until Phil stood up there on stage and said, we've worked with LG on this monitor. I'm like, what? Like, I have an LG washer and dryer. I don't have an LG monitor.
LG makes a lot of the panels that go into other people's monitors, like Dell and HP. But
yeah, so in fact, I have a Dell monitor. I have a Dell IPS, a 24-inch Dell IPS monitor, which is beautiful. And I would have bought a bigger one, but I just don't need that kind of acreage in the setup that I have. I can't sit far enough away from it to appreciate any more than the 24-inch screen that I already have. So, you know, because otherwise you're just that kid in the Warner Brothers cartoon who's sitting 6 inches from the TV. That's what it feels like if I have any more monitor. So I don't, like, for me, the event was very confusing, and I'm not seeing, to me, they felt like the opposite events this week.
Yeah. That, like, well, and
here's a rev to a thing, or here's a completely revolutionary way to interact with your computer.
Well,
and they also didn't come from the people you think that they came from. And it's so weird.
It is weird. And I think it is interesting to see one company. I mean, literally, in the example you just gave of the monitors, we have one company that has, after many years of not seeing the value of doing so, has now fully embraced the "we will design," or at a minimum, "we will specify," in terms of the signature line, what hardware we think works best with our OS.
Yeah. And top to bottom.
And in some cases, top to bottom, we're going to design and take responsibility, take ownership of the entire user experience. So Microsoft is doing that now. Now, of course, this is Apple's sandbox, and Apple has been there for years. And the touch bar, you know, over the long term could end up being as revolutionary as something like the Surface Studio. We don't know yet. We haven't seen how it's going to get used. But
I still don't see it. Like, you know, like with the iPad, like I said, like I could see the possibility there, and I'm just not seeing it with a little extra strip on top of my computer. I want to, and I can't.
Yeah, well, and again, it's a little weird, but when you do see the LG monitors coming into play and some of the other stuff, it's like, okay, well, you know, Apple is at the point where it's giving up some of the user experience in favor of being part of a conglomerate of multiple partners. What I think is interesting, and I was just noticing this now because I did not get a chance to watch the event because, as is almost always the case, I am working when these things are happening. It drives me up the wall. but the interesting point from Stephen Trout and Smith appears to be that the touch bar is being run by a system on a chip that is similar to what is used in the Apple Watch.
Yeah, that was what I had also read that.
I think that's fascinating. I mean, I think that is the
that
is the monkey stapled to a cheetah.
Toaster fridge.
It's not the toaster fridge exactly, but it's definitely it's definitely some sort of hybrid beast, and it is the first onboard instance of something that is nominally an iOS device embedded inside the Mac. In fact, this may be the first computer inside a computer that Apple has sold, at least in terms of something you could interact with that had a user interface that you could interact with, since the Quadra 630 PC compatible, which was a long time ago.
And see, here's the thing is that when I look at this, like, I'm still seeing toaster fridge, and I'm trying to find the monkey stapled to the cheetah, but all I got is toaster fridge. And part of that, I think, is because I had a higher expectation. And it was because I was expecting something that very clearly was, I'm trying to figure out how best to put this, but it was something that was very obviously, very clearly the future, or pointing to the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we started getting special, you know, we got special events just for the laptops. And I understand, like, what they were doing with look at the original PowerBook and look where we are now. And I get that. And that's fine. You know, I remember when they talked about what the weights were on the new machines. And I vividly remember getting my PowerBook 1400, and a friend of mine said, and I had it in my backpack, and I had, like, taken it to work with me. And a friend of mine, like, later in the day, like, peeked over the cube wall and went, "Well, let's see it. Haul out your 6.5 pounds of fun and let's take a good look," you know? And I remember, which sticks in my mind forever. So I remember feeling like these are so much lighter. These are, you know, they're super useful. They're going to do all these things. And I understand the whole like ditching the ports and all of that, but mm-hmm. I didn't see the future in it the way we saw the future in the iMac, the way we saw the future in the iPad, the way we saw the future in the iPhone. The things that we've seen previously really seemed to point to something, and I didn't see a lot of direction, I guess, coming out of this particular one, which was, we didn't forget we have this little black box that you hook to the television, and we gave you a new whatchamajigger on top of your laptop keyboard. And the people I know who plug into an external monitor and close their laptop display, like, none of those people are going to like it. And then I also know people who put the laptop up on a stand and use an external mouse and keyboard.
That's true.
And so they're still not going to see it. You know, like, my mom will probably, you know, my mom might never see it. My mom has an external mouse. So she, like, if she got a new computer, she might notice that. But she also might decide that's just too much money to spend on a computer and do something else. Because that's the other thing a lot of people were talking about, was the pricing on these new ones is just apparently, I didn't price them. But apparently it's, I believe the technical term is crazy town banana pants.
Steep. They're definitely steep.
Yeah. To put it mildly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think that's a really good point. And I hadn't thought about the degree to which, of my laptop experiences, they're so many of them are mediated by an external keyboard and an external monitor. So I'm losing the specialness of that UX. Now, okay, well, maybe that means I get the 13 without the strip if that's what I want. But yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, and I think about how much time do I spend working on a laptop directly versus working
in your lap,
in my lap. Now, by the way, speaking of keyboards and laptops in your lap, if you know anybody who feels like replacing the keyboard, the space bar on a 15-inch Retina 2013, someone in my house, I don't know who, and I'm not pointing fingers, but someone has done something to create a sticky space bar situation that I'm not happy with. So
uh-oh.
I'm going to have to get that keyboard replaced. But anyway.
Well, can't you just go down to Texas? Oh.
Why? Why would you do that? What is wrong with you?
Well, my first thought was just to be immediately helpful and be like, oh, I'm sure Lori Duncan would help you. Hi, Lori.
Yes, Lori would help me, and I could bring it to her attention. But yeah, I if it were my primary machine, it would annoy me more.
I'm sure.
It now is just like when I use it, as opposed to it being our gap year folks Skype machine, which is what it is most of the time. By the way, so we've got in our house, we have two gap year students staying with us for a year.
Yeah.
And they were both, the program they're participating in gave them both Lenovo Ultrabooks, little, you know, 10-inch Windows 10 machines.
Okay. Yeah.
They hate them. they won't use them. They're like, we can't deal with these.
Oh.
And their primary Skype and Facebook and et cetera machine is my, you know, giant battleship of a 2013 Retina MacBook Pro.
That's awesome.
And they're like, this is great. This is the best computer we ever used. We love it. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, try not to make it sticky, because, like, you get the peanut butter in and the keyboard gets sticky. But anyway, yeah, it's a battleship. It's holding up very well. Leaving aside the event for a moment, I mean, there was more there, but I think the core point that you've made is really well taken, which is that there were some contrasting, and not accidental contrasts, but very deliberate contrasts from company brand M and brand A this week.
Oh yeah.
But leaving aside the event for a minute, between the iOS 10 and the Sierra, What's your experience been over the past couple of weeks? I'll reiterate what I said before the show in a minute, but I want to hear what you've run into or not run into.
Well, I'm not on Sierra, because I'll be honest because I'm a chicken. I'm on not LCAP.
LCAP.
LCAP? Yeah. I might be on LCAP. Yeah, I think I'm on LCAP. I don't remember. I just did it the other day. Because
wow.
I had to. And it was I'm on 10-11. So yeah, I'm on LCAP. I'm only one back now because I was worried about audio stuff, because audio seems to be one of the last groups of people that, like, the people that make audio drivers and things like that seems to be one of the last groups that ever does it. And I was doing just fine on Yosemite, so I just never got around to pulling the trigger on going to LCAP in the first place. So I have, and I don't mind it. My issues on iOS are nitpicks. I'm not having, like, a vast usability problem. I have rage quit home I don't know how many times. So except for that, I've slowly gotten to it. I have a text message tone that I bought from the tone store that doesn't work for some reason.
Oh, that's, like, frustrating.
It worked on iOS 10, and then suddenly about a week ago, it doesn't work anymore. So I don't get BB-8 when people text me now. I just get the ping, and I hate it. We hates it, Precious. We hates it. And because I need to know, because I'm one of those weird people that, like, when my phone goes off, I want to know it's mine. So
yeah.
It drives me up a wall that phones ship with a default ringtone. I think they should be silent, and then you have to pick one. That way, at least you know what your phone sounds like when it's ringing, because otherwise, like, everyone in Starbucks has to go for their pocket when somebody's phone goes off. And so I always want it to be mine and sound like me. And then one day I was like, wait, what do you mean there's a ringtone store? And then I went in there and there's a whole Star Wars section, and I was powerless. And so I have this little BB-8 noise that has quit working. I don't know why. The habit that used to be part of iOS 9 has come back, which is awful, which is when I'm playing music in the car over Bluetooth and something lights up the screen, it makes the music skip.
What?
Yeah. The old one did that all the time. Even on my, no, was it on my 6S? On my 5S, it did it forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And it took until like a .2 update before it finally went away. Like, it was forever. My battery's been sucking more on iOS 10. I don't like how the widgets work. My other complaint with iOS 10 is on my iPad, which I have a first-gen iPad Air, which does not have Touch ID. Mm-hmm. And so now I have to hit the home button to wake it up, and then I have to hit the home button again to get in. And it is the most frustrating thing that Apple could possibly have done to me.
There's a way to turn that off.
How? Because I looked for it and I couldn't find it.
Who had it? I think it was Peter Cohen who had it.
Okay.
So you can check back with him on Facebook or on iMore. But yes, it is possible to disable that, the double press unlock. I think I've actually finally gotten used to it, but I am finding that like the little affordances and the things that I have to like restart thinking about again of how do I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Are weird. I'll tell you what's really, well, there's one thing that's really messing with me. So just yesterday, I had switched my personal phone to a 7 a couple weeks ago, and then
right
now I just got a 6S at work. So I have two phones that are essentially exactly the same in terms of size, but
yeah.
They're different in terms of they have different home buttons, and
yes.
I have... Now both of my phones have 3D touch, and
yes.
It took me, not kidding, it took me like a day to figure out how to delete and move apps. I'm like, whenever I press and hold, it like does the thing with the thing. And
so here's my pro tip for that.
Just leave your finger on it.
No, go adjust the touchiness of the 3D touch.
That's what I
Because there's
do.
A gauge. Yeah, you can have like...
This.
Low, medium, high, or something like that, but you can adjust it. And I played around with mine and finally got like okay, so now I can just rest my finger there and it's fine, instead of where, because initially I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to push really hard in order to get anything to happen. So I set it to like the super lightest, and then I too couldn't ever delete an app. And so I was like, I fooled around with it a little bit, and then and finally figured it out, and it got better. So that's one thing to consider.
I will say that I generally leave the 7 on. I leave cell data off on it because it's on a shared family plan, and I generally don't need the cell data. I usually on Wi-Fi. Battery lasts for days. I can leave it in my bag on.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it goes a long time. When I swapped and restored to the 6S yesterday, because I had to do VPN and other things in the middle, like after the restore, but before all the apps had restored, I got in and did stuff that resulted in it stopping the reload. So I had to tap about, 110 apps.
Yeah.
But it's all good now. It's fine. And it's actually quite nice. It's interesting to have them, to have both of them, and to see, honestly, how
different.
Well, how similar the experience is, but the water resistance, the fake home button, all that, it's good. I'm still wondering about the headphone jack. I'm still trying to figure out
I didn't even get into that, but that was another thing from yesterday. They shipped us a bunch of laptops with a headphone jack and USB-C ports, which means the phone you got a month ago doesn't plug into the laptop you just bought.
Yeah, you need a special cable for that.
And the headphones. Same thing for the headphones.
That's a good point.
So this is why I'm just confused. I'm like, I feel like nobody at Apple is talking to each other as much as they need to be right now.
Yeah, you feel like there should be some sort of come to glory meeting.
At least like the people on the phone team could have been like, yeah, we're ditching the headphone jack. And then maybe the laptop folks could have been like, oh, well, we could do that too. And then that way the headphones you get with your iPhone will work on your laptop. That would be great. Thanks for the heads up, but no.
No.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye. Well, what else is going on? Because it's getting late. We got to wrap it up, but I want to...
hellos.
We do have hellos to send, and thank you everybody for sticking with us. We do have an unreleased mystery show.
We do.
So thank you, Ben Harrison. Hi, Chris Fuller. hi, Info Driveway.
Hi, Info Driveway. Who I just got to see on Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah. Because he huffed down from Bellingham to see the Pet Shop Boys concert that was here.
Oh.
And I got to go too. And it was awesome.
You got to go to the Pet Shop Boys. I got to go to Universal Studios.
Some more?
Some more. Week last.
Wasn't it great?
It was fun. I had bronchitis, so I was not at my best.
That's less fun.
It was less fun, but we did get to ride some of the rides that I hadn't done before, which was...
Well, there's a whole new section of Universe at Harry Potter that we didn't get to see because it wasn't there yet.
Yes, well, I had been to, Diagon Alley, so I had been to that before, so we did walk around there and sample the butterbeer and so forth. And it is quite, the theming is amazing. I got to ride the E.T. ride, which is really shows its age at this point, but it's great because you're like, you are on a bicycle or a set of bicycles, and there's a point where you do take off and you fly, and the forced perspective and the cityscape below you, and it's like, it's one sort of really well done, really transcendent moment. You're like, oh, this is great. And then you go through hyperspace and you go to E.T.'s home planet and help E.T. rescue E.T.'s three friends. And then it's a small alien world after all. It is the craziest, weirdest, E.T.'s dancing colored mushrooms, bad trip craziness. The last 90 seconds to 2 minutes of that ride is batshit. And And somebody, I emailed it to somebody. Somebody said that, there's a tweet out there that I can find that every E.T. animatronic figure that you meet in the course of that ride looks like he's schooling you in a rap battle. And it's true. It's like those are the gestures and the facial expressions. But it's nuts. And you're just like, what would make you think, what would make anybody think who is working with Steven Spielberg on this project and like, you know, trying to get this right, mm-hmm. what would make them think this is what E.T.'s home planet is like?
Yeah.
Like, this is almost certainly not what E.T.'s home planet is like. We know that much. But this is what you're telling us. And, you know, here it sits at Universal Studios for however long.
Yes.
And, yeah, it's just weird. It reminded me that amusement park rides or these sort of experiences in amusement mm-hmm. parks simply cannot age well. They become kitsch, or they become some sort of ironic commentary on themselves so quickly, and the amount of effort involved in like taking the Haunted Mansion, for example, and making it, you know, revitalizing it, making it relevant again without changing what it essentially is about. Like even when you do that, it becomes goofy mm-hmm. again. Anyway, it was interesting, and we had a lovely time. I was sorry I was sick, but I was glad to be hanging out with my friends at Universal Studios and eating a free turkey leg, which was overwhelming. Oh my gosh, like the size of my head.
They are. Oh yeah,
they're huge.
They really are.
So yeah, that was fun, and thank you to the Gartner Symposium folks for making it all possible. It was great. I think I did send you a picture of the workroom at the Dolphin, where we had spent so much
Dave
time.
And I both
yep.
started like rocking and crying, I think. Yeah.
Sorry about that. anyway. How was Pet Shop Boys?
It was amazing. So for people who don't know, they still make records. They make great records. I really enjoyed the most recent. It's a lot of fun. It was really great because particularly like now in 2016, they were here a few years ago as well. But particularly as they continue to sort of not chart in the United States, the people who are there are people who have really gone out of their way to be there. It's not like somebody walked by and saw it on the marquee and rolled up and bought a ticket, you know? So it's really great to be there with like people who are big fans, you know? And so when they start singing Go West, everyone in the place is singing along. And when they start doing, you know, some of their other songs, they have a couple of others where people just sort of spontaneously started singing along. And it was really a fun moment to be part of. Like, the energy was really great. It was super fantastic. I just posted a picture earlier. I need to go through the rest of my pictures and look at them on the Apple TV and make sure that everything is... that I don't have stuff that I thought turned out really well, but in reality, it's very blurry or something. I did get a couple of the gentlemen with them, my Lego guys, at the beginning of the show.
Yay.
Cause for as big a Pet Shop Boys fan as I am, like, I have no patience for West End girls. one of the many contradictions of Kelly. So during West End girls, I was able to get the guys out of my purse and hold them up and get the shot that I wanted. So you know, there was that. But it was a lot of fun to be there. It's a pretty high energy show, because they make, you know, 80s, 90s, 21st century disco music. Yes. There's no getting around it. It's disco music. And so it was a lot of fun, and they're still in great form. They still put on ridiculous costumes. They still do, like, you know, it's an amazing show. And it was like the second date, I think, of this tour in the US. So I was pretty excited about it. The only thing I was disappointed about is that ages ago, and I want to say it was like 94, maybe 95, 96, Pet Shop Boys did a song with David Bowie. and it's called Hallow Space Boy. And yes, I said that properly. It is spelled H-A-L-L-O Space Boy. And they did not do it. I was sort of hoping because I saw the Pet Shop Boys in 1999 in Las Vegas. Twice in my life, I've gotten on a plane to go to a concert. Once it was the Pet Shop Boys. Wow. Yeah. So we went and saw them, and Dusty Springfield had passed away. And they had like from the music video they did with her, they had her on the screen behind them. And then Neil was singing and she was singing back, and they had like the recorded audio. And I was sort of hoping they would do something like that for David Bowie, and they didn't. So I was kind of disappointed not to get to hear Hallow Space Boy live, because I think it's an amazing song. It's one of my all time favorite songs, period. And I was kind of disappointed not to get to hear it in person, you know, especially because they could have done something in tribute to David Bowie. So that was about it, I think. But it was super fun. It was a chance to be out in public with Mr. Kelly, and between our schedules, that doesn't happen a whole heck of a lot. So it was a lot of fun to get to do that. And yeah. So, and also hi again, Jonathan, because I got to see Jonathan and while they were down here to see the show. So that was pretty awesome.
That is great.
Before I forget, hi Brittany, because I know Brittany's listening, and hi Diane, because I know she's listening. And they're like, in my mind, the two of them are sort of linked together, because apparently we forgot to put the t-shirt that I got from Brittany in the show notes. And so Diane came back to me and was like, you talked all about this shirt, but I don't know where to get it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And then she was like, I got one. I'm really excited. So in my brain, they sort of go together. So,
well, we have to say also thank you. Hi, Tony Walla. And
hi, Javi.
Hi, Javi. And
let me have my dream, Mike.
I'm sorry. Your dream. I'm not. Who's taking your dream away?
No, I'm kidding. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, see, there you go. Hi, Kelly.
Because
Other Kelly.
We're back.
Yes.
We're back.
It's it's basketball season again. Yeah. So folks, this is our last episode about technology, and we will be back to the Rip City Rockin' tours starting next week. Kelly, where can the peoples find you?
I'm sorry, I'm really distracted because I kind of want to start a Rip City Rock on Tours podcast.
I know you do. I can hear the gears turning.
Do you hear that?
The branding
in the back of
wheels
my head.
Spinning.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. Well, you can find me generally on Wednesdays on the Daily Observations podcast. You can find me on Twitter as Verso. And in the very near future, you can find me on a new podcast that Victor Cahio and I are going to get off the ground.
What?
I know.
That's very exciting.
It's going to be super fun.
I look forward to that. You can find me on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose. Podcast recommendation of the week. Check out Greatest Generation, Benjamin Harrison and the guys doing that over at Maximum Fun, a very funny show about Star Trek. And I was thinking about Star Trek today, of course, because of the coup de grâce touch strip. So on behalf
I'm going to recommend a thing today before we go. I'm going to recommend
it.
Go to YouTube and type A Stranger Things Christmas.
Oh,
I'm not going to say any more than that.
God.
I'm not going to say any more, but you got to see it.
Okay. Well, if that doesn't hold you over till next time, I don't know what will. On behalf of both of us here at the After Show, thank you guys for listening. We will be back soon. And be good to one another. And here, before I forget, is the music. Talk to you soon.